A number of months ago, I got a phone call asking if I'd take an assignment to preach at Tyrone, and they gave me a title. And one of the things, when I usually study to preach, I usually have a burden. The Lord gives me a burden or an inspiration, and then through my study, He gives me a title. One of the things about assignments is I'm given a title, and then I've got to look for the inspiration, and it seems kind of backwards sometimes. And this title, I thought, was probably going to be pretty difficult to have a burden and to gain inspiration. And the Lord is faithful, and He gave, and I still feel quite inspired about it. I preached there a month ago, this message, and you may have seen it in the bulletin. May I bargain with God? What does bargain mean? In the way it's used here as a verb, a bargain means to negotiate the terms and conditions of a transaction. Very simple. Just negotiations. And it's an agreement between parties deciding what each receives and what each gives and between them and what course of action they're going to take. And may I bargain with God? I've talked to a number of people about this before I sat down to study. I had this rolling around in my mind, and almost everyone mentioned Abraham. Was Abraham bargaining with God there when God came to him and told him his plan? He said, I'm going to destroy Sodom, Abraham. I'm fed up with it. I can't look at it anymore. And then we have this dialogue between God and Abraham. And Abraham said, Lord, for 50 righteous souls, you won't destroy the righteous with the wicked, will you? And they went back and forth. And I didn't write it down. What did it come down to? 5. Was Abraham bargaining with God? And then there was a time where God was angry with the children of Israel for just reasons, and he told Moses, get away, I'm going to destroy them. And Moses said, no, Lord, blot my name out, but save the people. And God did. I'd like to suggest, it's my belief, that neither of these men were bargaining with God. I believe that Moses and Abraham were interceding for people. And that's not negotiating any kind of terms, not asking God to change what his ultimate will is, but it's intercession. And let's always, never question whether we can intercede for other people with the Lord. God loves that. God hears that. God acts on those prayers. And so I'd like to say this morning that's not what we're talking about. Turn to Genesis chapter 28. While you're turning there, I'd like to mention there's an account in Numbers where they were going to go face another army, and the king said, Lord, if you give us the victory, we'll go over there and we'll just destroy that city. And the Lord gave them the victory, and the king, I don't even think he's named there in Numbers, but he held true to his part of the deal, and he went and destroyed the city. Genesis chapter 28 is the account of Jacob traveling, and he got to this, it was dark, and so he went to sleep. And the Bible says he used a stone for his pillow, and then he dreamed and he saw angels going on this ladder between earth and heaven, and God came and God spoke to him. Let's read now when he woke up, starting in chapter 28, verse 18. And Jacob rose up early in the morning and took the stone that he had put for his pillows and set it up for a pillar and poured oil upon the top of it. And he called the name of that place Bethel. But the name of that city was called Luz at the first. And Jacob vowed a vow, saying, if God will be with me and will keep me in this way that I go, and will give me bread to eat and raiment to put on, so that I come again to my father's house in peace. Then shall the Lord be my God. And this stone which I have set up for a pillar shall be God's house. And of all that thou shalt give me, I will surely give the tenth unto thee. And we know the story. God did fulfill all of these things, and I believe Jacob kept his part of the deal. And I also thought of a personal experience, someone I know personally. I've changed some of the details so that in case some of you know that it's not real obvious, but we're going to talk about a man named Roger. Roger grew up in a very ungodly home. Roger was introduced to drinking at a very young age and became helplessly addicted. And as he went through life and some circumstances and some moves, God brought him into contact with some of his people and with his word and with teaching. And Roger started coming to church. And Roger started attending and listening and hearing God's word, but he couldn't let go of the bottle. After a bit of time, he ended up in a hospital, very sick. And there in fear and desperation, and he was sure he was going to die. And Roger said, God, I promise if you heal me from this and get me out of here, I'll never touch alcohol again. And so you don't know the situation, but just think with me. And if I didn't know the situation, my first thought is, yeah, Roger, God probably healed you, and within a month you were back at it, weren't you? But that's not the case. God did heal Roger, and Roger came out of that hospital, and to my knowledge, in 3 or 4 years, has stayed totally clean, never touched a bottle again. Jacob, this king in Numbers, Roger, all these situations seem to show us that bargaining with God has good results. Maybe it's something we should... May I bargain with God? I'd like to look a little closer at it. And before we go into this, I'd like to make a little disclaimer. We're going to be pretty hard on Jacob for the first part of the message. But hear me to the end. And I'd like to look at that a little more after we're done looking at Jacob. Look at what Jacob said here. Verse 20. If God will be with me, then I will. And so the first part I've titled, Bargaining with God by Contingencies. Any of you signed a purchase offer on real estate, you might be familiar with that word contingency. It's an out. If I can't get the financing, if the inspection doesn't pass, it could be a number of things. If I can't sell my old house, I can honorably walk away from this deal and it's over. So what if God didn't take Jacob on his way that he was going and didn't provide bread and raiment? Did Jacob leave himself an honorable out, exit, contingency? What about the meantime until God shows him that he's going to fulfill his part of the deal that Jacob attempted to make here? Was Jacob a free man to kind of not follow God and not claim him as his God like he was going to do if God did his part? Contingencies are powerful bargaining tools. We use them. We probably are on the agreement side oftener than the one making the contingencies. Fill out a credit app. Agree to terms and conditions with your credit card. Set up an account online, redefine print. It's full of contingencies. If there's an act of God, they don't have to keep their end of the deal. We have contingencies all around us, and sometimes we initiate them, and there's nothing wrong with that. In fact, it's usually wise in especially in big business deals, to have some contingencies. Why? It's good to leave ourselves an exit on some of these things because often we don't know the people that we're dealing with. And we need to have some language in a deal that if they don't fulfill their part, that we're not bound to our part. Another reason that a contingency is wise in business is because we don't know the future. We don't know if our house is going to sell, so we write it in the deal and we make a clause that in the case that my house doesn't sell, I don't have to buy yours because I don't know the future. And because I don't know you, my inspector may find something in that house that you've hidden and haven't been truthful about. And if that's the case, I need to have an exit. I need to have an honorable way to walk away. Bargaining with God by contingencies and saying something like Jacob said, if God will do his part, I'll do mine, shows that I don't know God. Bargaining with God and saying, if you do your part, I'll do my part, proves that I don't trust God to be in control of the future. I think attempting to bargain with God in this way shows a warped view of God. Why would I, in dealing with God, why would I even consider the possibility that I need to have an out, an honorable way to walk away from a deal? Think about God and all that He's done for us. He's offered us relationship with Him. He's offered us to be His sons and daughters when we deserve to die. He's offered and promised so much to us, and all we need to do is accept it. There's no reason to renegotiate the terms that God has offered. There's no improvement can be made to those terms and to what He has offered us. God's promises are not in doubt, never. And His ability to make them good is never a question. And as we look at His faithfulness through all of history, way back to Jacob's time and right to present day, there's no reason for any human being to need to soften his commitment with God and put any ifs in the picture. And so if we have thoughts of bargaining with God by contingencies and by leaving ourselves an exit or an out or an honorable way not to keep our part of the commitment, we need to learn to know God as the loving Father that He is. The second part I see here from Jacob is bargaining with God by barter and trade. Look at verse 22. If God does His part, Jacob says, all that thou shalt give me, I will surely give the tenth unto thee. If you bless me, I'll give some back, God. And it's not wrong to come to God and to ask Him to prosper our plans, ask Him to maybe heal us like Roger, or to help us out of some difficulty like that king in Numbers and he's facing this large army. And it's nothing wrong with using difficult times and times of desperation like Roger there in the hospital to look seriously at what we need to change. Roger knew very well that bottle needed to go. And God desires to speak to us in those kind of situations. And it's good, and we need to look honestly and see how God would want to bring us closer to Himself and help us progress in our Christian virtues, maybe in our Christian life through difficulty and disaster. But God isn't a shrewd trader, and God's not a bargaining businessman. God's not some clever lawyer with some hidden fine print. he's not a conniving politician with some kind of agenda that's hidden, and we got to really watch him with both eyes and never turn our back. Never. Let's never lower our relationship and our commitment to God to such a level. Is that the God you know? No. God allows sickness. God allows us situations and fear of death sometimes and close shaves with death. Not as a strong-handed way to get us to give something up. Sometimes as a very loving and merciful way to get our attention, often. The Bible tells us that He brings situations into our lives because those that He loves, He chastens. And sometimes He needs to bring us pretty low to get our attention, doesn't He? But it's still not some strong-handed bully trying to get the best end of the deal. It's love and mercy. In bargaining and bartering, both parties need to have something of value to the other. I have windows, and you have money. Now we can bargain. We can come to an agreement. I can tell you what I can offer, and you can agree what you can pay. And we go back and forth. That's how we barter. That gives both parties some leverage, because I need money to pay bills, and you need windows to stay warm. And so we can go back and forth. Turn to Acts. We were in Acts for our Sunday school, weren't we? But let's look at chapter 17. Acts chapter 17, and I'd say this sums up the burden that the Lord gave me as I studied for this title. Acts chapter 17, verse 23, Paul said, "This unknown God, Him declare I unto you." And that's the burden that I have in this message in thinking of bargaining with God. From the Word, I'd like to declare God unto you. This God, verse 24, God that made the world and all things therein, seeing that He is the Lord of heaven and earth, dwelleth not in temples made with hands, neither is worshipped with men's hands, as though He needed anything, seeing He giveth to all life and breath and all things, and hath made of one blood all nations of men for to dwell on the face of the earth, and hath determined the times before appointed, and the bounds of their habitations, that they should seek the Lord, if haply they might feel after Him and find Him, though He be not far from every one of us. For in Him we live and move and have our being, as certain of also of your own poets have said, for we are also His offspring. We'll stop there. Is anyone here? Look at these verses, and is there anyone here who has a position to bargain with God whatsoever? God doesn't need anything. It's Him that gives all things. It's He that has created us. This is our God. None of us are in a position to offer God anything that He needs. That's God I declare unto you, Paul said. Seeing He giveth to all even life and breath. Everything we have down to our breath is God's, and He has given to us. There is no bartering that I can do with God. There's nothing that I have to offer Him. It's like a penniless man trying to bargain with me to buy windows. There's nothing you can offer me. I can't do it. I declare unto you the God from Isaiah that says, "Ho, everyone that thirsteth, come ye to the waters, and he that hath no money, come ye, buy and eat. Come, buy wine and milk without money and without price." That's God. Come, I'll give it to you. All you need to do is come and buy and eat without money. 1 Timothy says, "Don't trust in uncertain riches, but in the living God who giveth us richly all things to enjoy." That's the God I declare unto you, the God that giveth richly, and our enjoyment is His desire and His interest. And then Romans 12 tells us that anything we can offer to God is just our reasonable service, even our bodies. We need to present them a living sacrifice. It's not something we can offer to God as a bargain, as something that we can use as a way to change His mind, but it's just our reasonable service. Now I'd like to think about this thought of being too hard on Jacob and too hard on Roger. God gave them what they requested. It seemed to work out fine. And what I would suggest is that for both of these men, it was early in their experience with God, early in their relationship with God. And after I preached this message at Tyrone, an older brother there came to me and he told me that his father was a drunkard in the Mennonite church for years and years, and was a drunkard. And I wish I could remember the details, but at the birth of their youngest child, there was a very strong possibility that both his wife and the new baby were going to die. And right there on the hospital, he threw himself on the floor and he said, God, if you spare these, I'll turn around. And the Lord spared his wife and the child, and the man gave his heart to the Lord and went on to give up his drink and to be a Christian. And maybe there's someone here that says, well, I was like Jacob. I made a deal with God, kind of like Roger. And I don't want to be here and condemn that, but I'd like to stir us up and to invite us to think seriously and to know God better than that, and to move on with our relationship with God and to see Him not as someone that we have to make a deal with, but someone that just, what is that verse? Daily loadeth us. And when God brings us into difficult situations, let's make commitments to Him. But let's not put any ifs in there. Let's just honor Him and say, God, I see You touching an area of my life and it's Yours. I give it. Don't put any ifs. We went on through, if we go on through Jacob's life, God had a lot of work. I heard Brother Clifford Weaver years ago preach a message on Jacob the supplanter. He was a conniving, wheeling, dealing, slippery kind of man. And I wish I could remember all that was said in that message, but it made an impression on my teenage mind that God worked with him all through life, and God wrestled with him there, and he limped after that. And all of that, God was one step at a time taking Jacob to a better relationship with him than a conniver, than a dealer. And Hebrews tells us, by faith Jacob, when he was a dying, blessed both the sons of Joseph and worshipped, leaning upon the top of his staff. I'm really blessed that Jacob is in the heroes of faith, and there was a lot more to that blessing the sons of Joseph. There was a vision of God's people, and I don't believe Jacob was any kind of supplanter at that point. I believe God worked with him. And so if any of us have found ourselves and can think back to where we've maybe in innocence made deals with God, let's let God continue to work with us just like Jacob and take us to a deeper relationship with Him. Let's leave Jacob and let's look at another man who attempted numerous times to deal with God. Turn to Exodus chapter 5. We're going to look at Pharaoh. Exodus chapter 5, let's read verses 1 and 2. And afterward, Moses and Aaron went in and told Pharaoh, "Thus saith the Lord God of Israel, let my people go, that they may hold a feast unto me in the wilderness." And Pharaoh said, "Who is the Lord that I should obey his voice to let Israel go? I know not the Lord, neither will I let Israel go." I titled this section, Bargaining with God by Hard-Hearted Compromise. And as we go through the next 5 or 6 chapters here in Exodus, through the plagues, it's the record of dialogue between God and Pharaoh through Moses and Aaron. And repeatedly, the Bible tells us that Pharaoh hardened his heart. And it even tells us that God hardened his heart. Turn to chapter 8, Exodus chapter 8, verse 8. After the land was filled with frogs. Verse 8, Pharaoh called for Moses and Aaron and said, "Entreat the Lord that he may take away the frogs from me and from my people, and I will let the people go, that they may do a sacrifice unto the Lord." Verse 12, and Moses and Aaron went out from Pharaoh, and Moses cried unto the Lord because of the frogs which he had brought against Pharaoh, and the Lord did according to the word of Moses, and the frogs died out of the houses of the villages and out of the fields, and they gathered them together upon heaps, and the land stank. But when Pharaoh saw that there was respite, he hardened his heart and hearkened not unto them, as the Lord had said. Verse 25. And Pharaoh called for Moses and Aaron and said, "Go ye, sacrifice to your God in the land." And Moses said, "It is not meet to do so, for we shall sacrifice the abomination of the Egyptians to the Lord our God. Lo, we shall sacrifice the abomination of the Egyptians before their eyes, and will they not stone us?" And verse 28, Pharaoh said, "I will let you go, that you may sacrifice to the Lord your God. Only ye shall not go very far away. Entreat for me." And then verse 32, and Pharaoh hardened his heart at this time also, neither would he let the people go. First, Pharaoh said, "No way, I don't know God, I won't hear anything of it." Then the frogs came and he said, okay. But as soon as the frogs were gone, he changed his mind. And then what came next here, we could have read all these verses, but the next plague came and he said, "Okay, you can go, but just don't go very far away." And as we go into chapter 9, verse 27. And Pharaoh sent and called for Moses and Aaron and said unto them, "I have sinned this time. The Lord is righteous, and I and my people are wicked. Entreat the Lord, for it is enough that there be no more mighty thunderings and hail, and I will let you go, and ye shall stay no longer." And then Moses told him, "Well, as soon as I'm gone, you're going to change your mind." And verse 34, and when Pharaoh saw that the rain and the hail and the thunders were ceased, he sinned yet more and hardened his heart, he and his servants. And the heart of Pharaoh was hardened, neither would he let the children of Israel go, as the Lord had spoken by Moses. Chapter 10, verse 7, Pharaoh's servants said unto him, "How long shall this man be a snare unto us? Let the men go, that they may serve the Lord their God. Knowest thou not that Egypt is destroyed?" And Moses and Aaron were brought again to Pharaoh, and he said, "Go and serve the Lord your God. But who are they that shall go?" And so we have Pharaoh again saying, "All right, you can go," but I believe this is where he said, Moses said, "We will go with our young and our old, with our sons and our daughters, with our flocks and our herds will we go, for we must hold a feast unto the Lord." Maybe I'm wrong, but I thought this was where Pharaoh said that go, but leave some back. Just the men maybe can go. And Pharaoh continued to do this. Verse 16 in chapter 10, again, Pharaoh called for Moses and Aaron in haste and said, "I have sinned against the Lord your God and against you." Now therefore forgive, I pray thee, my sin only this once, and entreat the Lord your God that he may take away from me this death only. And he went out from Pharaoh and entreated the Lord, and the Lord turned a mighty strong west wind, which took away the locusts and cast them into the Red Sea. And there remained not one locust in all the coasts of Israel, of Egypt. And the Lord hardened Pharaoh's heart so that he would not let the children of Israel go. And this continued. We could look at a number of other, all the way into chapter 12, where Pharaoh would run up against, and he'd say, okay, I'm wrong. You can go. And he'd try to figure out a way. And finally, it would come down to it. No, he will not let them go. He will not hearken to God. Does this come closer to us than we think? Are we ever like Pharaoh? Are we ever right here in churches, Christians, people that have been taught the scriptures? Are we ever like Pharaoh? When we are in a position that we need help or correction from others, or when God speaks very clearly and we need to make some changes in our lives, or maybe we fail in the same area again and again, but we refuse to fully surrender to God and do what he said. God used different ways. There was a time in chapter 7, verse 15, where Pharaoh was going to the river, and God told Moses and Aaron, just go meet Pharaoh. He's going to the river. Pharaoh was just going about his normal life, going to the river. I don't know what he was going to do there, but I think it was just an everyday thing. And there were Moses and Aaron. God sent his leaders to talk to him right there. And sometimes God does that to us. He sends someone and we meet someone and maybe they find us in a position that it's very obvious that we need help. Or maybe God sends them to us because they found out something that we need to change or something we've done wrong. And we start to be like Pharaoh and we start to play some kind of cat and mouse game, and it's all about how can I give just enough to stay out of trouble, but yet I'm going to keep control of my life. I'm going to do what I want, but I'm just going to weave around the barriers that the Lord sends to keep out of trouble. And we try to compromise with God, and we say, well, yeah, I'll go to church. I'll do better at going to church. I'll show up for prayer meeting oftener, but I don't want to give up what God has his finger on. And so often the devil tries to hide, or not tries, so often the devil is so good at hiding the reality from us that this is hard-heartedness. And we're like Pharaoh's men, and we start to blame the people who remind us of our needs. How long are you going to let this man destroy you? They told Pharaoh. And we just refuse to give in. And our conscience condemns us. So we try to give a little bit of compromise to soothe that. And our parents start to question and put pressure on that something needs to change. But they can't touch our heart. They can't change our mind. We need to make those choices. Even our church leaders can't change a hard heart. Only we have the ability to give that to God. Satan is so good at trying to get us to be like Pharaoh and to find some middle road where we're still in control, but we can still have the blessings of God's people. And until we're ready to fully surrender and hand God that signed check and give it all over, this hard-hearted compromise and cat and mouse game continues, and we become harder and harder and harder, just like Pharaoh. In stark contrast, Hebrews tells us, by faith Moses, when he was come to years, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season, esteeming the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures in Egypt, for he had respect unto the recompense of the reward. By faith he forsook Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king, for he endured as seeing him who is invisible." I underline four words in that verse. Refused. There's the way of the world, the way of my hard heart needs to be refused and forsaken. It says, Moses refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, and by faith he forsook Egypt. We need to refuse and forsake. And then there's two other words, choosing rather and esteeming the reproach of Christ. What we choose and esteem needs to replace what we refuse and forsake. It's the only way to avoid the end that Pharaoh faced. Hard-hearted Pharaoh died chasing after the children of Israel, still going against God's command to let them go. And if we don't make the radical decision like Moses did, the only other option is to perish like Pharaoh in a hard-hearted state. Jesus said, "No man can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he will hold to the one and despise the other." That's the message of Jesus Christ. The message of compromise is directly from the enemy of our souls that will destroy us. And so, just to summarize, and maybe end this on a positive, the last part of the message, I felt like the disciples in Luke chapter 11, we looked at a verse there already this morning, but in Luke 11, the disciples, it says, "And it came to pass that as Jesus was praying in a certain place, when he ceased, one of his disciples said unto him, Lord, teach us to pray." And that's a burden that I have as I thought of this. As we know our God, as we look at all that he has offered and just the benefits that he's offered us, as we look at relating to him, that should be our cry. Lord, teach us to pray. And Jesus taught them to pray. And he said, "When you pray, say, Our Father which art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come. Thy will be done." Thy will be done. That's prayer. That's how we come to Jesus. That's how we come to God. Let's learn from Jesus how to pray and learn that prayer is about conforming my will to God's will, not the reverse. Jesus showed us by example, and he fell on his face and he prayed, "Oh, my Father, if it be possible, let this cup pass from me. Nevertheless, not as I will, but as thou wilt." No kind of bargaining with God. "Lord, if you let me out of this, I'll go do whatever. But not as I will, but as thou wilt." Prayer is a complete debtor crying out to the one who has given him everything. That's how we come in a relationship with God. When Saul met Jesus on the way on the road to Damascus there, he fell down and he said, "Lord, what wilt thou have me to do?" That's how we come to God. Not some kind of bargain, not some kind of deal that we need to make. And the Lord said unto him, "Arise, go into the city, and it shall be told thee what thou shalt do." So after we've come to fall down before God and we acknowledge his lordship, we say, "Lord, what wilt thou have me to do?" We accept his terms and we obey his direction, but it might come from some other imperfect human being. And sometimes we resent that, being told by some imperfect person what is actually God giving direction to my life. But it's part of full surrender to God. It's part of praying to God. When we ask God to show us the way, we better accept not only the way, but how he has told us how he's going to bring it to us. Back to the Lord's Prayer. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory forever. Amen. Teach us to pray. It's all God's, like we looked at in the Sunday school lesson. This is all God's work. This is not about me. And we need to just give it to God. There's nothing for me to bargain with. Last month on the Saturday before we went to Tyrone, I was sitting at my desk and I was studying this. And I had an interruption. I don't remember what it was, but I took my phone and I went to Fox News and I was going to read some world news. And I was just scrolling through the headlines, and I don't know what made me open this one. It wasn't even something that the headline didn't catch my attention really, but I read it. I opened it and I read it. And I'll read it to you. It was written by Joshua Andrews. He's an attorney from Washington, D.C. He says, my 7-month-old nephew, Canaan, was dying, and nobody knew it, not even his doctor, who had misdiagnosed his issues. One afternoon, Canaan became totally listless, to the point of almost looking dead. By the time my brother Caleb and his wife Rebecca got Canaan to the emergency room, his body had gone into septic shock. Doctors and nurses scrambled to rescue him as someone quickly ushered his parents into the waiting area. Right there in the emergency room waiting area, Rebecca did something remarkable. She got down on her knees and said, God, I'm going to worship you right now. No matter what happens, you're still holy, you're still good. Teach us to pray. That mother would have had every right, wouldn't she, to say, Lord, spare my son and I don't know what her needs might have been. She did, probably. But her response just shocked me. God, I'm going to worship you right now. No matter what happens, you're still holy, you're still good. That's how we pray to God, not some kind of bargaining. Let's kneel to pray.